happening? What's happening? Who are they? Who are they?
People of Earth, attention. This is a voice speaking to you from thousands of miles beyond your planet.
It starts so innocently. You look into the sky and your life changes forever. If you think we're alone, think again. Skywatch International. Information you can trust.
What's happening? What's happening? Who are they? Who are they?
And welcome. This is the Skywatch Hour, and I'm your host, Jim Hickman. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about UFOs and the people that drive them. UFOs have been around for a long time, and now it's time for us to get real. A recent CNN Time poll showed 54% of Americans believe intelligent life exists outside of Earth, and 8% of Americans think the government is hiding knowledge of the existence of extraterrestrial life forms. The American people overwhelmingly believe the government has not released all information on UFOs. Imagine 34% more people believe in the existence of UFOs than believe in the credibility of our own government. Let's get real for a moment. We're missing the point of ufology. It should be more than just a UFO sighting reporting service. We've got to remember that us ufologists are a political group that can and should have the clout of any major lobbying group out there. We should act like it and work together as a body and demand changes. Since 1947, when something crashed, a UFO with alien occupants, according to witnesses near Roswell, New Mexico, the fact that the U.S. government's been withholding information from the public on UFOs and aliens has been on the mind of true believers. There have been sightings reported in every state in the United States, according to MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and the National UFO Reporting Center. It can be substantiated that millions of voters are motivated by this UFO issue. Ralph Nader recently said, "I agree the Air Force has not disclosed everything. I have no idea why they don't level public. One has to wonder why the secrecy. It seems even presidents are kept from the knowledge." Of course, but they're only part-time help. They're gone after a maximum of only 8 years. Secrecy on the UFO issue goes back at least 60. Back in 1968, a certain young congressman said, "The American public deserves a better explanation than that thus far given by the U.S. Air Force. I strongly recommend that there be a committee investigation of the UFO phenomenon. I think we owe it to the people to establish credibility regarding UFOs and to produce the greatest possible enlightenment on the subject." Soon to be President Gerald Ford never again addressed the issues of UFOs, and won't to this day. At a news conference back on July 29th, 2000, televised on CNN, President George W. Bush replied, "Sure, I will. When a citizen asks if you tell the public what the hell's going on with UFOs," quote unquote. Bush indicated that Vice President candidate Dick Cheney would use his experience as Secretary of Defense to address the issue. Well, it's 2005, folks, and we're still waiting. I talked with Dr. Ed Mitchell, an Apollo 14 astronaut in Roswell recently. He told me a government cover-up of UFOs. That's putting it mildly. We've been lied to and covered up. We must work as one, as a single voice to our elected officials and tell them we will no longer tolerate the official secrecy concerning the UFO issue. We demand open access to all records regarding the issue. We must stop the internal bickering between UFO groups and work together to make this happen. With 80% of the public behind us, we have a voice that the politicians can no longer ignore. Well, how do we achieve this? First, everyone who is even remotely interested in the UFO issue must make direct contact with their elected officials. A sincere handwritten letter means more than 1,000 emails. Write your senator, your congressman, anybody who'll listen, write to him. If you don't know your senator, go to the website www.senate.gov. In Congress, go to www.house.gov. You'll find their addresses there. I propose all UFO groups get together as one under a single banner and form a political action committee. We've got to directly target the politics of UFOs and ET phenomenon. My group, Skywatch International, has been working for years with the Senate, in the U.S. Senate, lobbying, along with the Expact, the Extraterrestrial Political Action Committee, and our lobbyist, Stephen Bassett. We've been involved in this since 1995, and we have been working closely with Congress on it. And in the future, we hope to provide a voice of reason to leaders of our government, go beyond what I call the giggle factor, and get to the truth, and have it finally disclosed to the public. Well, I've been told that people can't handle the truth. But, you know, I believe that people can't stand for the lies. And I'm ready for the truth about the extraterrestrial presence. And we must demand disclosure now. Okay, that's our editorial segment for tonight on the Skywatch Hour. And if you're interested in the politics of UFOs, all you have to do is go to our website at www.skywatch-international.org. That's skywatchinternational.org. Okay, now on to the rest of the show. We're going to talk a little bit tonight about the alien presence here amongst us and about what you can do to report UFOs, what you can do to help us in Skywatch, help the cause, as we might say. All right. Last week's show, we mentioned a little bit about what is a UFO. And maybe we'll go a little bit about what we do to conduct a scientific investigation of UFOs and UFO-related phenomena. You know, UFOs have been reported in all sizes and shapes and throughout the years. So we have to, as ufologists, we have to find a way to classify them. And we've developed what we call the J. Allen Hynek UFO classification system, named after the famous Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who worked with NASA and the Air Force for many, many years as a specialist on UFOs, an expert. And anyway, we named the classification system after him. And due to much advancement in the field of ufology, we find that the truth is hard to find. Once again, some reports we get in are of nocturnal disks, other daylight disks, as we call them. There are also close encounters, designated as CE1, 2s, and 3s. Abductions are sometimes referred to as CE4s. I'm sure you're familiar with the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Well, that's where they got the name from. During close encounters, witnesses report seeing UFOs that are shaped like saucers, boomerangs, spheres, diamonds, cigars, triangles, or other strange shapes. They have bright lights, sometimes white or red, other times multicolored. The reported speed of UFOs vary dramatically. They can hover silently and then take off instantaneously and fly at a great speed. Certainly, they have been flying much faster than conventional aircraft. They can also move slowly across the sky and are just stay absolutely still. They can perform unbelievable maneuvers, right-angle turns at incredibly high speed. We don't know what powers these UFOs have or why they have such maneuverability. All right, there are few unquestionably authenticated pictures of UFOs. Many so-called UFO photographs are really natural phenomena, such as strangely shaped clouds or other phenomena, or light leaks into the camera, or flaws are induced when the film is developed. Some photos are deliberate hoaxes made by people who want you to believe they have seen UFOs for any number of reasons, such as fame, money, or to promote a religious or philosophical viewpoint. Some of the best UFO photos were taken up in McMinnville, Oregon, in 1950, and Rouen, France, in 1954, off the coast of Brazil in 1958, and Lubbock, Texas, in 1951. These cases have been completely investigated, and all of them are authentic. The Lubbock case we're going to have as a special coming up on an upcoming show. So stay tuned for that. We'll have that upcoming. We'll talk about the 1951 Lubbock Slights case. I've been reinvestigating it along with the Loveland case, which is a town just south of Lubbock. So stay tuned. That's going to be a part of our upcoming fourth book. Hey, there are videotapes of UFOs that are taken all over the country. Some of the best videos in the Hudson Valley region in New York and over in Belgium. Pictures can be seen in many UFO books and on our website at skywatch-international.org. You can also get books in your library. All right, photos are not sufficient proof for the reality of UFOs. Why? Well, they can easily hoaxed, very easily hoaxed. Many researchers have theories about what UFOs might be, but none of us really know. It's all educated guesses. How we obtain reports of UFO sightings and other paranormal events? Well, there's several ways. We have a website where we have reports. We can click on our file a report link at skywatch-international.org, and you can file a report, and it goes to our National UFO Reporting Center, and where we work in cooperation with Peter Davenport and his group to maintain a database of all UFO files that are open and available for anybody to look through anytime they'd like. These are categorized by type of craft or by state, time, location, wherever you want, however you want to do it, you can customize that database. And we have links to how to get on our web from our website. But the first real step in a UFO sighting, when we get called, we get a phone call, we get an email, is to go to the scene and to collect data. Now, one thing Skywatch International is very well known for is that we always use the scientific method to collect data. We don't just go out and pick it up. We try to organize it into some sort of system where the data can be shown to be reproducible. And the UFO sighting data comes from the individuals who make the reports. And lots of cases, the witnesses really don't know where to make that report or who to call, and they usually end up calling the police. And the police will usually have our card on hand, very readily available, so they can contact one of our investigators or any of the other groups. The MUFON also has investigators in every state, and they're very good, and highly recommend them too. But the police will usually call up a local investigator who will come out. And local radio and television stations also contact us quite regularly. We also have our number on file with them. From time to time, our media carries stories, sightings and encounters, and that's a real good source. For the most part, report them from a network of skywatchers and who are out there on a daily basis looking into the sky. And the main thing is that our investigators need to follow up on these reports as soon as possible when the experience is fresh in the minds of the witness. And we always try to obtain a narrative description of the event and record it by any media available. That can mean that we tape recorder, video camera, even just writing down what the witness has to say is important. We have a detailed 12-page report that our investigators fill out for any sighting, and try and have this information captured for future analysis. We can look back at cases going clear back to 1947 because of the excellent work that's been done by people before us, showing us quite detailed reports. And we try and maintain that sort of high quality in any reports that we get. We try and have the witness draw a sketch. The sketch should show the date, time, and any compass directions. We want to make sure that the details are put down on there and colors marked onto the sketch. I wanted to give you just a brief rundown of this basic classification system, the Jalen Hynek report. Now, strangely behaving lights in the night sky are the most commonly reported sighting. Once again, they're nocturnal lights. This doesn't include any light that puzzles the observer, or which this is one that the experts find puzzling. because this behavior of light does not fit the pattern of light from known sources. An object is known as unidentified when it is unidentified to all, not just to the witnesses. We mentioned this earlier, daylight disks, which are UFOs sighted in the daytime. They're usually called the daylight disk. Appearance is often reported as metallic-looking. Majority of daytime UFO photos show disc-shaped objects. We get many radar and radar visual sightings. And it's for radar-indicated UFOs. Washington, D.C. sighting in 1952 is a good example of this. And we try to find if it can be established with reasonable assurance that a radar sighting confirms a visual sighting or vice versa. And we find that this is a sighting of major importance. So we really do take in radar evidence because it is good quality physical evidence. And radar is very capable of picking up good solid objects. So we always try and look to radar if possible. Now, close encounters, which we mentioned a little bit earlier, is a broad category. These are UFO sightings that occur within a few hundred feet, or a distance where the witness is able to find and see with his unaided vision and be able to distinguish details. This type of sighting becomes a personal UFO experience for many people. This, as a matter of fact, is the type of sighting that got me into this business as a personal note back in 1962. And talk about being at a distance where you can distinguish detail. We had an object fly over our farmhouse at about 50 to 75 feet in the air. And very slowly, probably 20, 25 miles an hour, no more than that, emitting a loud screeching siren kind of sound, really weird. And my whole family saw it. And I was 7, 8 years old at the time. My older brother, older sister were there, mom and dad. And everybody there really didn't have a clue what was going on. My dad knew, he looked at us, that's a UFO. He had seen UFOs back in World War II, which we call today Foo Fighters. And so he knew right away that that's what he was dealing with. Now, the rest of us didn't have any idea what a UFO was. We had never really talked about it. It wasn't that big of a deal back in the early 60s. And this object flew right overhead, and we saw two rows of windows, red lights in it, and occupants waved at us as they went over. And we waved back. So you should always make friendly gestures towards aliens. That's a line from one of my books, my first book, 5,000 Years of UFOs, Are We Really Alone? And you can buy that book, by the way, at Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, PublishAmerica.com, or on our website at SkywatchInternational.org. And we'll have links to that and how to contact us a little later in the show. Close encounters of the first kind is a close encounter with a UFO where there's no interaction of the UFO with the observer or the environment. The object must be close enough so it's in the observer's own frame of reference. Details of the object must be seen. This helps eliminate identifying Venus or an aircraft as a UFO. Further elimination of false sighting is when the object is seen by several persons who have the same conclusion, providing again that the object is questionable even to the experts. That's a CE1. CE2's close encounters of the second kind. A UFO is seen interacting with the environment, and frequently with the witnesses as well, is known as the CE2. Such interaction can be with inanimate matter, as when holes, rings, burn marks, or depressions are made on the ground, or even tree limbs that appear to have been broken off or away by contact with the observer. Interaction can be with animate matter, such as when animals are affected. Animals become very aware of the UFO phenomena, even before humans. It also would appear that many cat mutilations would fit into this category of encounter, perhaps at a higher level, somewhere between CE2 and CE3. This is, as other evidence is caused by the craft, cattle mutilation seems to be performed by those in the craft. Therefore, we have a closer encounter. Now, if you're interested in cattle mutilations, we have a TV show on the History Channel called The UFO Files, Cattle Mutilations. That's on a regular basis. It comes out at least once every week or two. And that'll give you a good idea of how we investigate cattle mutilations and the UFO phenomenon. They're directly related. Also, you can go to our website at skywatch-international.org, or you can buy my new book, which is just coming out, called The Rancher's Nightmare. It's from Publish America, and it covers the cattle mutilation phenomenon from the very beginning to the end, through the famous Rommel investigations in the 70s, all the way up to cases as late as last September. So we have a very good book there. I enjoy writing it. I've had several people who have read copies of it, pre-published copies, that say that they've learned more things about calculations than they ever have by reading some of the information that we've recovered. So if you'd like to get a copy of that, you can through our website. Onward to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Third Kind is an encounter that's not only with the UFO, but with its occupants. A CE3 encounter brings us more into the presence of intelligence other than our own. UFOs seem to demonstrate intelligent action that appears to be planned, not just random actions. UFOs have buzzed airplanes and cars. UFOs seem to prefer the lonely hours of the night. They usually, but do not exclusively, avoid crowds in urban areas. They make singular local appearances rather than moving about a wide area of the country. In CE3s, where the occupant make their presence known, in other words, the aliens, are discovered, we find creatures reported to resemble humans, robots, or even reptiles. There have been reports of abductions of humans, apparently for testing purposes. Abductions have usually been recalled through regressive hypnosis. This is because the abduction experience has usually been so traumatic to the witness that the conscious memory retains only a portion of that experience. The details must generally be obtained from the subconscious. Aliens have been reported to appear in a room and also to go through walls. This leads to a belief by some of interdimensional travel, which leads us to the string theory, which gives us a chance to have multiple dimensions. This is something that's not just brought up by fringe science. This is a very well-known and highly thought-of theory within the scientific community. Look it up. It's string theory. All right, close encounters of the fourth kind are abductions, and we've pretty much gone into that. Abductions are a large phenomenon that started back in the early 60s with the Betty and Barney Hill case, where they were abducted, and that was in all the media. We probably won't go much into that. We met Betty Hill a few years back, and very nice lady, very amicable, but she was convinced that she had a very, very close encounter with aliens. And she had two things going for her that make me as an expert, quote-unquote, believe that she wasn't just making something up. First was that she produced a star map of a place called Zeta Reticuli. I'm sure you've heard of that on other shows and in the science and things. It's a star system, quite some distance from here. Well, she was told back in the 60s that there was a planet circling that sun, a star system. It's a binary system, I believe. Well, of course, nobody believed her back in the 60s, but we found a few years ago through science that, yes, there are planets circling that star system. So she was right on that quite a few years, decades, before we knew about it as a general public. Next, she also reported during her encounter that she had an examination, supposedly to see if she was pregnant by these aliens, by them sticking a needle into her navel. This is a procedure that was developed in the United States and in France in the late 1960s, some years after this encounter. We call it today amniocentesis, and it's done in almost every hospital. So this was unknown, unheard of, when she was abducted. Once again, this is something that leads me to believe that this was a true case. Okay, fifth kind of a encounter is direct communications with aliens. Yeah. We can go into that. We've had many people report in some of the fringe groups that they are in direct communication with aliens and that they've brought us a message of love and peace, something like that. Well, it ranges, really, from one end to the other. We also have physical evidence that aliens do not want to be our friends and do not really look upon us as anything but test subjects. We've had reports of UFO-related human mutilations in Garapanga, Brazil. And we have that detailed in my second book, called The Alien Menace. We have over 100 cases documented where people have had, let's say, less than friendly encounters with UFOs and their occupants. And you can pick that book up at the same places we mentioned earlier, at Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Amazon.com, or a publisher at PublishAmerica.com, or on our website at SkywatchInternational.org. By the way, Skywatch is a nonprofit group. We're worldwide. We're one of the three largest groups in the world. We have investigators in about 100 countries in every state. As I mentioned, we're a nonprofit. I'm the director of Skywatch. We have a membership available where you can become a member and work your way up to investigator through training. And the applications are available online. We also accept donations from folks, and it was, you can turn in for possible breaking your taxes. And it's a deduction. And the form for that is also available online at our website. And all the money goes in, 100% of the money goes back into Skywatch to help make sure that we run this thing properly, that the website is run, kept up to date, and that all our efforts go towards uncovering the UFO phenomenon. So you can help us by joining up at skywatch-international.org. And I invite you to come by our website and just check out the news. We have updated news sources from over 4,500 different locations, which is updated, if not daily, hourly. And that's at our website, skywatch-international.org. All right, the next type of a category, or classification system, if you like, comes from Jacques Vallée, a famous ufologist, who put groups into five categories, actually. Forms a matrix that can be combined with the Hynek system to help us identify these. The groups are an AN, which is an anomaly, an FB, which is flyby maneuver, a CE, which is a close encounters, and also we have sightings, physical effects, living entities, reality transformation, and lasting injury. An example would be an FB1, which would be a simple sighting of a UFO flyby in the sky. This is the category most frequently reported. There are other more or less strange events that may or may not be associated with the UFO sighting, but nonetheless are targets of UFO research. There are categories of cases that may not fall neatly into the above system of classification. In the future, we've got to gather more data. These systems of classification may be extended, or even new systems of classification may come into use. Other possibly related phenomena are animal mutilations, crop formations, paranormal or psychic phenomena. So we have investigators in all those within Skywatch who help us to find the truth in each of these type cases. In most cases, one is collecting eyewitness testimony. In addition to eyewitness testimony, data gathered from reports may lead to researching corroborative data such as weather conditions, phase of the moon, on night of the sighting. This background research helps in evaluating a case in question. Now, we mentioned about CE4s. These are encounters with non-terrestrial life forms that we call aliens. Now, you ask, how do we conduct a field investigation? How does any UFO group present a field investigation? Now, we're prepared to interview our witnesses again, do on-site investigations, and we carry field kits. They include things like binoculars, compasses, pens, papers, pencils, maps, containers for samples. If you have seen that show on the History Channel that we did, you'll see that we go out and make soil samples. We've uncovered very strange sphere-shaped objects within the soil around these cattle mutilations. So we carry containers for samples. Usually try to keep those clean, if not sterile. All right, we carry measuring devices, rulers, things like that, flashlights, knives, string, things, anything that we can use to help us conduct a real field investigation. Now, when we interview the witnesses, we find that we have a formal way of asking questions. You want to have a faithful record of all the details without really leading the witness. And it's an objective approach. One has to be aware of many factors, though, and the foremost is gaining the trust and confidence of the witness. And many of us have gone and taken courses in psychology to help us understand the witnesses. But one, you can also ask policemen, reporters, to demonstrate how they conduct interviews and how you can maintain sensitivity to the witness's experience. We have the added dimension of a witness who has possibly experienced something extraordinary. The field investigator must also see to it that he schedules the interview as soon as possible after the occurrence of the event, while it's still in the witness's mind. My good friend Chris O'Brien from Colorado has gained a lot of experience working with witnesses in the field who report strange aerial lights and objects, as well as unusual animal deaths. He's submitted to us following guidelines to interviewing witnesses. We want to ask them, have you ever seen or experienced anything you couldn't explain before? If so, what, where, and when? Has anyone in your family seen, experienced anything they couldn't explain before? Once again, what, where, and when? Did you believe in the existence of UFOs prior to your current sighting experience? Has this current sighting experience changed your belief in regards to UFOs? If so, how? Do you believe in the existence of extraterrestrials? Has this current sighting experience changed your beliefs in regards to extraterrestrials? If so, how? And then we have a short section to assert the witness's immediate environment and the extent of the dissemination of their experience. Which means, how far did they get it out? How did they tell? Who did they tell? You know, when and where? Who did you tell about your sighting? Your family, friends, neighbors, police, the media? How local articles or local TV segments on UFOs are the phenomenon that you experienced? Have you seen in the past year? It goes 1 to 3, 3 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 or more. Do you notice any animal reactions before, during, or after your sighting experience? If so, describe them. Do you notice any sounds or subaudible noises or sensations before, during, or after your sighting experience? Now, what we're talking about there is buzzing, whirring sounds, whooshes, crackling, clicking, whining, anything, any noise that's unusual. Next question is, do you consider yourself or any family members to be sensitive or psychic? Have you noticed any unusual occurrences since your sighting? And what's the closest military facility to your sighting location? Because sometimes military aircraft can be confused for UFOs, as you can test by looking at the B-2 or the F-117 stealth fighter. How often do you see military flight activity in your environment? Do you see military aircraft often? How often do you see flights? Several times a day? Rarely? Never? The field investigator should ideally prepare a package of information, which generally includes a narrative, sketches, once again, photos and videotapes, any field measurements on separate sheets, and also we can calculate speed by using trigonometry. And I have a formula on my website that folks can use to come up with actual speed of the craft, and we won't get into that here because it's a little bit complicated, and we don't want to have to get into that. But it would probably require a calculator to figure this out. Anyway, that gives you an idea of what we go through. And we try and write down the time, date, location, weather conditions, the direction, orientation, the distance, and size. And we make note of any symbols, markings, lights, or sounds that come with the sighting or the object. Photos or a video are a plus. The report should be made right away to keep the evidence memory fresh. Recent reports are the most valuable. Older ones, which have possible value, are also welcome. Strange lights in the sky usually do not make a good report unless accompanied by video and are having moved in ways inconsistent or impossible for known phenomena or objects. What we mean to say is that if you see something in the sky by yourself and you don't have a photo or other people backing you up, we're going to be taking that probably a little less, I hate to say seriously, but maybe just a little less seriously than we would of a sighting that has multiple witnesses along with video and things like that. It's a little bit more of a substantial report. Abduction reports, we want to make sure that we seek out professional help, especially if you feel the need, if you've been abducted or had a close encounter. We have experts that work for Skywatch, medical doctors and psychiatrists, psychologists, who work with us, who help us to work through the phenomena. So if you have a problem, you can contact us, and we'll make sure you get to the right professionals. And these folks can consider this extraterrestrial possibility. Most professionals, if you've been in the field as long as I have, you know most professionals really don't take this as seriously as they should. We have a hard time getting the scientific community as a whole to even look at this subject. They have what we call the giggle factor, which they tend to be afraid to lose their jobs or their grants or whatever it may be by looking into this, which is the most wrong thing they can do, because if we find this evidence, which we are looking for, which is evidence of extraterrestrial presence, this will be the most important thing that has ever happened to mankind since we came climbing out of the swamps. Now, we already know that the intelligent life out there in the universe, and the scientific world knows about this now, and they agree. And they say there's not just one planet, there's multiple planets. The Drake equation tells us there's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of intelligent life forms out there in the universe. But how do we get that intelligent life to come here? Science says that they can't possibly come here because they can't travel faster than the speed of light. Thus, they can't come those long distances. And I tend to believe that that's probably less than the full truth, because if you look at, for example, we talked about Zeta Reticuli earlier. That's a star system that was formed approximately a billion years before the Sun and our planet Earth were formed. Now, if a life form got started a billion years earlier than we did, that may put them a billion years ahead of us in technology. And just consider what 100 years in technology is and what it means to mankind. Look back, this is 2005. Look in 1905. I believe a guy by the name of Wilbur Wright said that mankind would never fly, not in 1,000 years. And yet, in just a couple of years, he was the first man to ever fly. So that just shows you that, you know, nobody should take this stuff for granted. You should look at it, take it seriously, investigate it, because we don't know what science is going to find out in 5, 10, 20, 30 years. They will come to find that it is probably possible to go faster than the speed of light. We know that subatomic particles do it quite regularly, so why not other life forms? It's just a matter that we'd have to find it. If you look at science back in the 1940s, they said mankind would never fly faster than sound. It would break them up and it would kill them. Well, I believe Chuck Yeager proved them wrong in the X1. Look back in the 1830s, 1840s, they said mankind would die if they rode in a train that was going 25, 30 miles an hour. They said you'd be splattered against the black wall of the train. This is from science. And yet we know now that they didn't have a clue what they were talking about. So, once again, we have to take science with a grain of salt. All this stuff that they talk about is no more than what we talk about. It's all theories, theory is nothing more than educated guess. And that's all they're doing is guessing. So, it is very possible that aliens could not only be out there, but they could possibly be visiting us. Why? We don't know why. They could be here as one person said, there's a huge gate out there past Jupiter somewhere that they charge admission to come see the freak show here on Earth. But who knows? We could be a scientific experiment of some kind, and they're really not wanting to interfere with their experiment, their study. We don't know why they're here. The main thing we want to do with these reports is collecting of corroborative evidence for these events. It might involve the collection of physical evidence, such as ground trace evidence, photographic evidence and analysis, videotape evidence, and analysis of the photographing of injuries, strange body marks. We have doctors on our staff who evaluate injuries from people who have been in contact with aliens and UFOs, and these folks write reports for us and help us to understand what these people are going through. For a minute, I just want to talk about UFO hoaxes. You know, tens of thousands of UFOs have been reported over the past 40 years. Less than 1% have been shown to be hoaxes. For the most part, competent UFO investigators have been able to recognize hoaxes almost immediately. The most common type of hoax is a prank balloon, which has a flare or a candle tied to this helium balloon. Rare occasions, hoaxes have been perpetrated elaborately, and this required a more extensive investigation. And, myself, I was a victim of one of these hoaxes, but I won't go into it in much detail, but a guy who really probably had something better to do, who really tried hard to hoax us, and we had to go to Dr. Bruce McAbee and have him study the photographs thoroughly and write quite a detailed report on it, which is available on our website under our special reports, by the way. It's Lawton Hoax. And you can read his detailed reports of this photographic evidence and eyewitnesses' supposed statements. And the witnesses' reliability turned out to be less than credible. And this is one of the things we look at when we look at a UFO report to see if it's a hoax or not, is the credibility of the witness. We want to look at the details of the report, the physical evidence, the photographs, and we have to find and validate the reliability of these factors before we assert we can be confident in this witness's data. You can check the witness's reliability by interviewing his neighbors, his friends, relatives, co-workers, and other associates. In particular, an investigator is interested in determining whether the individual has a reputation as a sincere, responsible person, or as a practical joker, prankster, or hoaxer. Now, we want to also examine the UFO report to determine if there are any unbelievable claims or glaring inconsistencies. That sounds kind of funny, a UFO report with unbelievable claims in it. No, that can't happen. But yes, they can, and sometimes they're almost too good to be true. Yet other ones are too wild to be made up. So it really just comes with experience. After you investigate your first couple of thousand cases, it begins to show pretty much glaringly to you that these reports are science fiction. And we'll see some that aren't reported in any other UFO reports ever, and we find that those are always open for suspicion. We want to find out, this witness have claimed to have seen the UFO many times. They may see one every night when they come home and they're parked in their driveway. Yeah, this is something we have to ascertain from the witness to make sure that the witness is credible. Okay, onward here through this investigation, we got to remember that this is going to, a hoax will cast doubt on the UFO investigator if it's not investigated thoroughly. We have to make sure that none of this evidence is altered, falsified, or hoaxed. We have to make sure that it can't be explained away by more prosaic methods. And often we can determine that a UFO photograph is hoaxed upon our first viewing. You know, you may see a string hanging down. Clues such as actual evidence, physical evidence, is what we need and what we're looking for. We're looking for something we could take to the scientific community, set down on a desk in front of them and say, this come off of an alien UFO. And they could look at it and say, you're right. And that hasn't happened yet, we hope that it will soon. To be careful with computers these days, with photographic evidence, video evidence. As you know from watching TV and movies, computers can easily make a very convincing evidence. So once again, we have to be very, very careful that we aren't being hoaxed. And in any investigation that you do, you've got to critically and thoroughly examine this evidence. The more the evidence is proven to be unreliable, the greater the doubt cast is on the validity of this event. Rule of thumb that I always use to consider when I investigate a case is if something appears to be too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. This is true in life and not just ufology. So, you investigators out there, or budding investigators, beware. Never let your critical thinking skills down, because you never know when you're going to need it. All right, that gives you a little idea of what we deal with. You know, what the heck is a UFO? And now you know, have an idea of how we classify them, reported, who they're reported to, and how they can easily be hoaxed. There's been a lot of cases reported throughout the years, and we're going to be going back through history in the upcoming shows, all the way back to 5,000 years B.C., to document cases that have been reported, and to see what these reports contain, and find the truth within them, if there is any, and to weed out the fake reports. That'll be something you'd be looking for in upcoming episodes here of the Skywatch Hour. Just here in the last few minutes, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show, mention a few of the more important cases in UFO history as far as crashes and retrievals. This is things that kind of interest me, so I thought it might interest you as well. The first case I want to mention for folks that aren't familiar at all about UFOs is the Roswell case. Roswell, New Mexico, July 4th, 1947. Now, we have investigators based in Roswell here with Skywatch who are very, very familiar with the intimate details of this Roswell crash. And they report to us that the evidence and the eyewitness statements and affidavits by eyewitnesses are just beginning to stack up. Literally hundreds of these have been reported to investigators, and more coming in as people become older and are less afraid that they're going to be locked up for life for revealing these things. So once again, this needs to be looked at. I know it's been looked at hundreds of times by different reports on TV and in the media. But it does need to be thoroughly investigated closer, because there's a lot that hasn't been looked at. This is probably one of the most famous UFO crash cases, and most thoroughly investigated. A gentleman named William Mac Brazel, a local rancher, reported hearing a loud explosion during the night of a thunderstorm. Next day, he found debris in a field on his ranch. Word reached Major Marcel at the Roswell Army Airfield, and he investigated. He reported finding debris fields scattered over a mile. The material recovered from the debris includes small beams with hieroglyphics on them, metal that was as light as balsa wood but couldn't be dented with a sledgehammer, although flexible. This material also would not burn. The scrap material was flown to Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth. Witnesses described a second site where the main body of the craft was found, along with the bodies of the crew. We are not quite sure on that one, but this is something that needs to be investigated. We need to check it out. I personally know Major Jesse Marcel's son, Jesse Jr., who's in the U.S. Army. He's a pilot, and he's been a guest on my show before, and a very credible person. He's told me, and I've been to his house where this happened in Roswell, he's told me that seeing his kitchen, his dad brought home this strange material that was recovered out on the ranch, and they laid it on their kitchen table, and was shown to him, and his mother also confirms that this happened. So it's not just one gentleman reporting this, it's a mom and her son. And the major, Jesse Sr., had reported this up until the day he died that this had happened. So this is something that needs to be looked at very closely. And we hope that in the future we can get more people, things like the University of New Mexico, which is out currently doing a dig at the Roswell crash site, archaeological dig. This is the kind of things that we need. We don't need ridicule. We don't need fake reports. We need to have good scientific evidence. And we're beginning to get people to listen. And hopefully in the future we can have it. Another good crash, October 1947, Cave Creek, Arizona. There's still living witnesses down in Prescott who saw this crash. Another case, March 25th, 1948. Famous little town now called Aztec, New Mexico. Many people consider it a hoax. I was in Aztec speaking earlier this year at their UFO conference, and I'm here to tell you that that is a real case, as real as any other. We found many witnesses to the story. We found some evidence that there had been a recovery at the crash site. The story is that a large disc said to be 99 feet in diameter came down in the Hart Canyon. The military recovery team was dispatched from Durango, Colorado, to recover the crash saucer. Now, we found police officers who were there who verified that something happened, and many eyewitnesses verify the same thing. Aztec, New Mexico, probably the least known major UFO crash. March of 1948 in Socorro, New Mexico, a second craft came down in the vicinity. It was much like the Aztec craft, according to an ex-Army private. August 14th in 1952, a disc crashed near Ely, Nevada, and 16 bodies were supposedly recovered. In May 20th, 1953, in Kingman, Arizona, an engineer who also reported the event said one or two bodies were recovered. He rode on a bus with darkened windows from the Nevada test site to the crash location. The disc was found embedded in the sand and was embedded at a high angle. He states his job was to determine the disc trajectory and velocity. There have been rumors of additional crashes, including a controversial report of a South African Mirage jet shooting down a disc over the Kalahari Desert in Botswana on May 7th, 1989. There are also reports of a disc crash in Chihuahua, Mexico, August 25, 1974, and one in Megas Plantanos on September 2, 1990, which is in central Greece. A few of these reports have been investigated as thoroughly as the Roswell case, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't be dismissed. These are cases that are still open to debate. A recently unclassified FBI memo of March 22, 1950, alludes to three saucers recovered in New Mexico. This memo states that it was believed the radar station interfered with the saucer's control mechanisms, causing them to crash. If this is true, then such a discovery would suggest the idea of a weapon that could be used to bring saucers down. The Phoenix Foundation has also compiled a list of other crashes. April 17, 1897, no, not 1987, 1897. Over 100 years ago, Aurora, Texas. Now, this crash we're going to be documenting on the History Channel soon on a new UFO Files show, so watch for it. A mysterious airship said to have crashed in this town, exploding into many small fragments. Reportedly, the occupant was child-sized and greenish, and the craft also contained papers covered with hieroglyphics. The pilot's body is supposed to be buried in the local cemetery. And this case is widely regarded as a hoax. New investigation brought to light a particular alloy that was eventually analyzed by the McDonnell Aircraft Company and found to have unusual properties, to say the least, non-metallic metal. Now, we're going to try real hard on this History Channel show to get access to the cemetery and exhume the body of this alien from 1897. Keep you updated here on the Skywatch Hour on that one. All right, let's go and talk a little more about Skywatch, and then we're going to leave you for this episode of the Skywatch Hour. Once again, we are the best source for credible UFO news from around the world. And you can go to our website at skywatch-international.org for the latest news. Everything we have on there is free for you. We also have links to our free mailing list through Yahoo Groups. You can sign up to get the UFO reports just like we do as they come in from witnesses. We will get those out to you if you're on our mailing list. If you'd like to contact me directly, my email address, my name is Jim Hickman, by the way. I'm the executive director. You can contact me at director@skywatch-international.org. And I will email you back with the answer to any questions you may have about UFOs or the alien phenomenon or calumny relations, whatever you'd like to know about. I can help you with it. We also have our monthly newsletters available online at Skywatch. We have archives of it. It's called The Skywatcher. And you're more than welcome to download it. It's in PDF format. And it's some of the best articles, which you probably never read or known about. But you can load them there and read them at your leisure. And that's, once again, our website at skywatch-international.org. Well, coming up in upcoming episodes, we're going to be talking about not only the new show that's coming out, but some upcoming speeches I'll be giving around the country, including one that's going to be in the Atlanta area, if you're listening in that part of the world. We are in the process of settling a date and time on that one, and we will be there talking about this phenomenon. And if you're anywhere in the Georgia area, come on by and we'll visit with you about this, about the entire UFO phenomenon. I hope it's fun. I hope we'll have fun talking with everybody there, and that we'll not only have a little fun, but maybe learn something. I try to educate people. That's really one of our goals here at Skywatch, is to educate. And that's why we've been talking tonight about what is a UFO, how to investigate it, how do we get credibility in the field, and how to get Congress to act. If you have any questions on any of this, once again, contact me. I'd be glad to answer them. And we'd like to thank the folks who are helping us with this show, and want to remind you that we'll be back on Thursday nights. That's every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Central. That's through bloginservice.com. And we have archives available there as well of our shows. Download it, and you can play it at your leisure. So until next week, as I always say at the end of the shows, keep watching the skies. Good night. Hi, I'm Jim Hickman, and I know the truth is out there.
Jim Hickman, author and host of Wake Up USA, is currently presenting several multimedia presentations from his books, The Alien Menace and 5,000 Years of UFOs. Among these presentations, Jim Hickman's journalistic investigation, A Blood-Soaked Paper Trail, Medical Evidence of Abductions and Human Mutilations, is a chilling report factually detailing abduction and mutilation, and Media versus the Flying Saucers, an historical look back at the media's portrayal of the UFO issue. To book Jim Hickman for your conference, lecture, or media interviews, contact him at info@thehickmanreport.com. That's info@thehickmanreport.com. The Hickman Report. Information you can trust.
It starts so innocently. You look into the sky, and your life changes forever. If you think we're alone, think again. Skywatch International. Information you can trust.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting Service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.